Terrell Campbell and Ian Holm in Brief Encounter by Noel Coward.
So here it was at last. The time Alec and I had been ready. The time of our parting.
Almost time for me to go.
Yes.
My train's due in about 5 minutes.
We were sitting at our usual table in the corner of the refreshment room.
Shall I get you another cup of tea?
No, thank you. Will you have one?
I don't think so, no.
It was just an ordinary day. Much like any other in this winter month at the beginning of 1939. Around us, the world was going about its ordinary business. At other tables, passengers ate their sandwiches and sipped their tea. And over at the counter, the ticket collector chatted to the refreshment lady.
Sorry, I couldn't get in yesterday.
Yes. I wonder what happened to you, Mr. Godby. Bill, there's some tea been spilled on the counter.
Yes, Mrs. Bagger.
Where are the other ones?
Yes, Mrs. Bagger.
I had a bit of a dust-up.
What about?
I saw a chap getting out of a first-class compartment.
Mm.
And when he comes to give up his ticket, it was third class. And I told him he'd have to pay excess. And then he turned a bit nasty and I had to send for Mr. Sword.
Oh, that little could he be.
There was so much to say to each other. And so little time.
Are you all right, darling?
Yes. I'm all right.
I wish I could think of something to say.
Doesn't matter. I'm not saying anything, I mean.
I'll miss my train and wait to see you into yours.
No, no, please don't. I'll come over to your platform with you. I'd rather.
Very well.
I thought something must be wrong when you didn't come, Mr. Godby.
Well, I'd have popped in to explain, but I had a date and had to run for it the moment I went off.
Oh, indeed.
A chap I know's getting married.
I'm afraid I really can't stand here wasting my time in idle gossip, Mr. Godby.
Aren't you going to offer me another cup?
Term and tide wait for no man, Mr. Godby.
Well, I don't know what you're huffy about, but whatever it is, I'm very sorry.
It was at this point that Alec and I were suddenly interrupted by the arrival of someone I knew, Dolly Messiter.
Nora, what a lovely surprise.
Oh, Dolly.
My dear, I've been shopping till I'm dropping. My feet are nearly falling off and my throat's parched. I thought of having tea and spindles, but I was terrified of losing the train. Do you mind if I join you? Oh, that's better.
This is Dr. Harvey.
How do you do?
How do you do? Laura, you look frightfully well. I do wish I'd known you were coming today. We could have come together and lunched and had a good gossip. I'm known shopping by myself anyway. There's your train.
Yes, I know.
So, aren't Harvey with us?
No, I go in the opposite direction. My practice is internal.
Oh, I see.
I'm a general practitioner at the moment.
Dr. Harvey is going out to Africa next week.
Oh, how thrilling.
I must go.
Yes, you must.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
He shook hands with Dolly, gave my shoulder a little squeeze, and then went quickly out.
You have to run or you'll miss it. He's got to get right over to the other platform. Oh, talking of missing trains, remind me of that awful bridge at Broadham Junction. You have to go fixing all up one side, along the top and down the other. Well, last week I'd been able to see Bob's solicitor about... Oh, is that the bell for our train?
No, it's for the express.
The bell train?
Yes.
Ah, that's the train that doesn't stop, isn't it? What was I saying just now? Ah, yes. I was talking about last week. You see, I've been able to see Bob's solicitor.
Dolly talked on and on. And as she chattered, she applied lipstick to her mouth, watching the operation in her little hand mirror. She was so absorbed in herself that she didn't notice when I left her and went out onto the platform. I stood there waiting for the express to come through. When the express had finally gone, I went back into the refreshment room.
My dear, I couldn't think where you disappeared to.
I just wanted to see the express go through.
What on earth's the matter? Do you feel ill?
I feel a little sick.
You need a drink to buck you up. I'll get you one.
That's our train.
Have you any brand?
I'm afraid it's that well.
Surely, if someone's feeling ill, it's very well. How much?
10 pence, please.
Here you are, dear. That'll make you feel better.
Thank you.
Better drink it quickly or we'll miss the train.
I gulped down the brandy and then followed Dolly out onto the platform. We found an empty compartment and sat down.
I really am worried about you, dear. You look terribly peaky.
I'm all right. Really, I am. I just felt faint for a minute, that's all. It often happens to me, you know. I once did it in the middle of Bobby's school concert. I don't think he's ever forgiven me.
He was certainly very nice looking.
Who?
Your friend. That doctor, whatever his name was.
Yes. He's a nice creature.
Have you known him long?
No, not very long. I hardly know him at all, really.
Well, my dear, I've always had a passion for doctors. I can well understand how it is that women get neurotic. Of course, some of them go too far. I'll never forget that time Mary Norton had jaundice. The way she behaved with that doctor of hers was absolutely scandalous. Her husband was furious and said he would do...
I wish that I could trust her. I wish she was a wise, kind friend, instead of just a gossiping acquaintance that I'd known for years casually and never particularly cared for.
Fancy him going all the way to South Africa. Is he married?
Yes.
Any children?
Yes. Two boys. He's very proud of them.
Is he taking them with him? His wife and children?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh, I suppose it's sensible in a way, rushing off to start life anew in the wide open spaces and all that sort of thing. But I must say, wild horses wouldn't drag me away from England and home and all the things I'm used to. I mean, one has one's roots after all, hasn't one?
Yes. One has one's roots.
A girl I knew years ago went out to Africa, you know. Her husband had something to do with engineering or something. And my dear, she really had the most dreadful time. She got some awful kind of germ through going out on a picnic.
I wanted to stop her talking. Oh, how I wanted her to stop talking.
All her hair came out. And she said the social life was quite horrid. Provincial, you know. Very nouveau-riche.
Oh, Dolly.
What's the matter, dear? Are you feeling ill again?
No, not really ill, but a bit dizzy. I think I'll close my eyes for a little.
Oh, poor darling. What a shame. And here am I, talking away 19 to the dozen. I won't say another word. And if you drop off, I'll wake you, just as we get to the level crossing. That'll give you time to pull yourself together and powder your nose before we get out.
I closed my eyes and thought, this can't last. This misery can't last. Nothing lasts, really. Neither happiness nor despair. Not even life lasts very long. I told myself that a time would come when I wouldn't mind any more. When I could look back and say quite peacefully and cheerfully how silly I was. But then I realized that I didn't ever want that time to come. I wanted to remember every minute, always. Always. To the end of my days.
Wake up, Laura. We're here.
Catchword!
Shall I see you home? I could quite easily, you know. It really isn't very much out of my way.
It's sweet of you, Dolly, but I really feel perfectly all right now.
Well, I shall telephone you in the morning to see if you've had a relapse.
I shall disappoint you.
Good night.
Good night.
Give my love to Fred and the children.
As I let myself in at the front door, Fred called to me from the sitting room.
Is that you, Laura?
Yes, dear.
Oh, thank goodness you're back. The house has been in an uproar.
Why, what's the matter?
Well, it's the children. They've been fighting again.
Oh, dear, what about?
Bobby's birthday.
But that's not till tomorrow.
Yes, but they can't agree about how to celebrate. Let me help you off with your coat.
Oh, thanks.
Now, Bobby's all for going to the circus. Margaret wants to go to the pantomime.
So what did you say we'd do?
I didn't. I wanted to hear what you'd got to say first. But I thought perhaps we could take them to both, one in the afternoon and one in the evening.
You know that's impossible. We shouldn't get home to bed until all hours. They'd be tired and fractious.
One on one day, then, and the other on the other.
You're always accusing me of spoiling the children. Their characters would be ruined in a month if I left them to your over-tender mercies.
All right. Have it your own way. We'll thrash them both soundly and lock them in the attic, and go to the cinema by ourselves.
Oh, Fred.
What on earth's the matter? You're crying.
Nothing. Really, it's nothing.
Darling, what's wrong? Please tell me.
Really and truly, it's nothing. I'm just a little run down. I had a sort of fainting spell in a refreshment room at Milford. Wasn't it idiotic? Dolly Messiter was with me and talked and talked and talked until I wanted to strangle her. But so she meant to be kind. Isn't it awful about people meaning to be kind?
Would you like to go up to bed?
No, Fred, really.
Well, come and sit by the fire in the library and relax. You can help me with the Times crossword.
You have the most peculiar ideas of relaxation.
That's better. You look so much nicer when you smile. Come on, let's go into the library.
Will some music throw you off your stride?
No, dear, I'd like it.
Then I'll put the radio on.
Oh, Fred. If only I could tell you. You are the only one in the world with enough wisdom and gentleness to understand. If only it was somebody else's story and not mine. As it is, you are the only one in the world that I can never tell. Never. Never. Because even if I waited until we were old, old people, and told you then, you would be bound to look back over the years and be hurt. And oh, my dear, I don't want you to be hurt. You see, we are a happily married couple, and must never forget that. This is my home, you are my husband, and my children are upstairs in bed. I am a happily married woman. This is my whole world, and it is enough. Or rather, it was, until a few weeks ago. But, oh, Fred, I have been so foolish. I've fallen in love. I'm an ordinary woman. I didn't think such violent things could happen to ordinary people. It all started on an ordinary day in the most ordinary place in the world, the refreshment room at Milford Junction Station. I was having a cup of tea and reading a book that I'd got that morning from the library. My train wasn't due for 10 minutes. I looked up and saw a man come in from the platform. He had on an ordinary mac with a belt. His hat was turned down, and I didn't even see his face. He got his tea at the counter and turned. And then I did see his face. It was a rather nice face. He passed my table on the way to his. The woman at the counter was going on as usual. You know, I told you about her the other day, the one with the refrained voice.
Yes, I am fond of animals. In their pigs, but not otherwise.
My landlady's got a positive mania for animals. She's got 2 cats, one Manx and one ordinary, 3 rabbits in a hutch in the kitchen. They belong to her little boy, by rights. And one of them foolish-looking dogs with hair over his eyes.
I don't know to what breed you refer.
I don't think it knows itself.
Quite suddenly, I got a piece of grit in my eye. It began to sting horribly.
Excuse me, could you give me a glass of water, please? I've got something in my eye and I want to bathe it.
Yes, madam, of course.
Would you like me to have a look?
Oh, no, please don't trouble. I think the water will do it.
Here you are.
Thank you.
A bit of cold, I start expect.
Man, I knew you lost the sight of one eye through getting a bit of grit in it.
Nasty thing, very nasty.
Better?
Oh, I'm afraid not. Oh.
Can I help you?
No, please. It's only something in my eye.
Try pulling down your eyelids as far as it'll go.
And then blowing your nose.
Please let me look. I happen to be a doctor.
Oh, it's very kind of you.
Now, turn round to the light, please. Now, look up. Now, look down.
Oh.
I can see it. Keep still. Keep still. There.
Oh, dear, what a relief. It was agonizing.
Looks like a bit of grit.
It was when the express went through. Thank you very much indeed.
Not at all.
How lucky for me that you happen to be here.
Anybody could have done it.
Never mind, you did. I'm most grateful.
Yep, that's my train. Goodbye.
And that's how it all began. Just through my getting a little bit of grit in my eye. I completely forgot the whole incident. It didn't mean anything to me at all. At least, I didn't think it did. The next Thursday, I went into Milford again as usual. I changed my book at Boots Library and bought 2 new toothbrushes for the children. Just as I stepped out onto the pavement, I found myself face to face with Alec once again.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning.
How's the eye?
Perfectly all right. How kind it was of you to take so much trouble.
It was no trouble at all. It's clearing up, I think. The weather, I mean.
Oh, yes. The sky looks much lighter, doesn't it?
Well, I must be getting along to the hospital.
And I must be getting along to the grocer's.
Oh, what exciting lives we lead, don't we? Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The following Thursday, I went into Milford again. The sun was out, and everybody in the street looked more cheerful than usual. A man with a barrel organ was playing "Let the Great Big World Keep Turning." I gave the man 6 pence and went into the Cardona for lunch. Just after I'd given my order, I saw him come in. He looked a little tired, I thought. And there was nowhere for him to sit. So I smiled and said,
"Good morning."
"Good morning. Are you all alone?
Yes, I am.
Would you mind very much if I shared your table? It's very full and there doesn't seem to be anywhere else.
Of course not.
I'm afraid we haven't been properly introduced. My name's Alec Harvey.
How do you do? Mine's Laura Jessen.
Mrs. or Miss?
Mrs. You're a doctor, aren't you? I remember you said you were that day in the refreshment room.
Yes. Not a very interesting doctor, just an ordinary GP. My practice is in Chirley.
And I'll take your order.
Ah, yeah. What did you plump for?
The soup and the fried soup. Mm.
Same for me, please.
Anything to drink?
No, thank you. Oh, that is, would you like anything to drink?
No, thank you. Just plain water.
Just plain water, please.
Right.
Good gracious, what's that?
It's the ladies' orchestra. They always play here.
Look at them. Have you ever seen such a queer-looking bunch?
I must agree, they really are rather awful.
And that cellist, she's too comic for words. She looks as if she's trying to saw the thing in half.
We shouldn't laugh, you might see it.
There ought to be a society for the prevention of cruelty to musical instruments. Well, you don't play the piano, I hope.
I was forced to as a child.
You haven't kept it up?
No. My husband isn't musical at all.
Oh, bless him.
For all you know, I might have a tremendous burning professional talent.
Oh, dear, no.
Why are you so sure?
You're too sane and uncomplicated.
I suppose it's a good thing to be so uncomplicated, but it does sound a little dull.
You could never be dull.
Do you come here every Thursday?
Yes, spend a day in the hospital. Stephen Lynn, he's the chief physician here, graduated with me. I take over from him once a week, gives him a chance to go out to London and me a chance to study the hospital patients.
I see.
Do you?
Do I what?
Come here every Thursday.
Yes, I do the week's shopping. Change my library book, have a little lunch, generally go to the pictures. Not a very exciting routine, really, but it makes a change.
Are you going to the pictures this afternoon?
Yes.
Well, how extraordinary, so am I.
But I thought you had to work all day in the hospital.
Well, between ourselves, I killed two patients this morning by accident, and the matron is very displeased with me. I simply daren't go back.
How could you be this silly?
Seriously, I really did get through most of my work this morning. It won't matter a bit if I play truant. Would you mind very much if I came to the pictures with you?
Well,
and I could sit downstairs. You could sit upstairs.
That seems too expensive.
The orchestra stopped as abruptly as it had started, and we began to laugh again. And I suddenly realized that I was enjoying myself so very much. I had no premonitions, although I suppose I should have had. It all seemed so natural and so innocent.
Which cinema shall we go to?
We have two choices. The Loves of Cardinal Richelieu at the Palace and Love in a Mist at the Palladium.
You're very knowledgeable.
There must be no argument about buying the tickets. We each pay for ourselves.
You must think me a very poor doctor if I can't afford a couple of one and ninepenny.
I insist.
I had hoped that you were going to treat me.
Which is it to be, Palace or Palladium?
Palladium. I was once very sick on a Channel steamer called Cardinal Richelieu. Oh.
Epic Films Incorporated are proud to present a milestone in the history of photoplay production. Flames of Passion, starring John Broderick and Elissa Faulkner. This film is stupendous, colossal, gigantic, epoch-making. Coming shortly to this cinema.
Buy your pram at Burton's, 22 Milford High Street.
I feel awfully grand perched up here. It was very extravagant of you.
It was a famous victory.
Do you feel guilty at all? I do.
Guilty?
You ought to more than me, really. You neglected your work this afternoon.
I worked this morning. A little relaxation never did any harm to anyone. Why should either of us feel guilty?
I don't know. 3 minutes
walk from this. How awfully nice you are.
Look. Look who it is.
The organist, I mean.
God.
It is the lady cellist from Cardoma.
We walked back to the station. Just as we were approaching the barrier, he put his hand under my arm. I didn't notice it then. But I remember it now.
What's she like, your wife?
Madeline? Oh, small, Dark, rather delicate.
How funny. I should have thought you would be fair.
And your husband, what's he like?
Medium height, brown hair, kindly, unemotional, and not delicate at all.
You said that proudly.
Did I? We've just got time for a cup of tea before our trains go. And for the third time in 1 week, he brought that common man and his wife to the house without so much as a bow or knee.
Oh. Yes.
Two teas, please.
Cakes or pastry?
Cakes or pastry?
No, thank you.
Are those bath buns fresh?
Of course they are. Made this morning.
Two, please.
That'll be sevenpence.
Right.
There's a table over there in the corner.
Oh, good. Let's go and grab it quickly. I'll carry the buns.
Too bad for one. Worse than coffee, I mean.
This is a professional interview. My fee is a guinea.
Why did you become a doctor?
Oh, that's a long story. Perhaps because I'm a bit of an idealist.
I suppose all doctors ought to have ideals, really. Otherwise, I should think their work would be unbearable.
Surely you're not encouraging me to talk shop.
Why shouldn't you talk shop? It's what interests you most, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I'm terribly ambitious, really. Not ambitious for myself so much as for my special pigeon.
What's your special pigeon?
Preventive medicine.
Oh, I see.
No, I'm afraid you don't.
I was trying to be intelligent.
You see, most good doctors, especially when they're young, have private dreams. That's the best part of them. Sometimes, though, those get over-professionalized and strangulated and... Am I boring you?
No, I don't quite understand, but you're not boring me.
Well, what I mean is this. All good doctors must be primarily enthusiastic. They must have, like writers and painters and priests, a sense of vocation, a deep-rooted, unsentimental desire to do good.
Yes, I see that.
Well, obviously one way of preventing disease is worth 50 ways of curing it. That's where my ideal comes in. Preventive medicine. It isn't anything to do with medicine at all, really. It's concerned with conditions, living conditions, and common sense and hygiene. For instance, my speciality is pneumoconiosis.
Oh, dear.
Now, don't be alarmed. It's simpler than it sounds. It's nothing but a slow process of fibrosis of the lung due to the inhalation of particles of dust.
You suddenly look much younger.
Do I?
Almost like a little boy.
What made you say that?
I don't know. Yes, I do.
Tell me.
Oh, no, I couldn't, really. You were saying...
The inhalation of coal dust, that's one specific form of the disease. It's called anthracosis.
What are the others?
Calicosis. That comes from metal dust. Steelworks, you know.
Yes, of course, steelworks.
And silicosis. Stone dust. That's gold mines.
That's for your train?
Yes.
Am I missing it?
No.
What's the matter?
Nothing at all.
It's been so very nice. I've enjoyed my afternoon enormously.
I'm so glad. So have I. I apologize for boring you with those long medical words.
I feel so dull and stupid not being able to understand more.
Shall I see you again?
It's the other platform, isn't it? You'll have to run. Don't worry about me. Mine's due in a few minutes.
Shall I see you again?
Of course. Perhaps you could come over to Ketchworth one Sunday. It's rather far, I know, but we should be delighted to see you.
Please.
What is it?
Next Thursday, same time.
No, I can't possibly.
Please. I ask you most humbly.
You'll miss your train.
All right.
Run!
Goodbye.
I'll be there.
Thank you, my dear.
I went out onto the platform and watched his train draw out of the station. I stared after it until its little red taillight had vanished into the darkness. I imagined him arriving at Chirley and walking through the streets and letting himself into his house with his latch key. Madeline, his wife, would probably be in the hall to meet him. I wondered if he'd say, "I met such a nice woman in the Cardona. We had lunch and went to the pictures." Then suddenly I knew that he wouldn't. I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that he wouldn't say a word. And at that moment, the first awful feeling of danger swept over me. By the time I got to Ketchworth, I had made up my mind definitely that I wouldn't see Alec anymore. I walked up to the house quite briskly and cheerfully.
You met me in the hall. Your face was strained and worried, and my heart sank.
It's all right, old girl, but you've got to keep calm and not be upset.
What is it? What's wrong?
It's Bobby. He was knocked down by a car on the way home from school. It's not serious. He was just grazed by the mudguard, but it knocked him against the curb and he's got slight concussion. The doctor's upstairs with him now.
I felt so dreadful, Fred. Looking at him lying there with that bandage round his head. I tried not to show it, but I was quite hysterical inside. As though the whole thing were my fault. A sort of punishment. An awful, sinister warning. An hour or two later, of course, everything became quite normal again. But all the same, I felt I really had to say something to you about Alec. Fred?
Yeah?
I had lunch with a strange man today, and he took me to the cinema.
Good for you.
He's awfully nice. He's a doctor.
It was Richard III who said my kingdom for a horse, wasn't it?
Yes, dear.
All I can say is that I wish he hadn't. It ruins everything.
I thought perhaps we might ask him over to dinner one evening.
By all means. Who?
Dr. Harvey. The one I was telling you about.
Must it be dinner?
Well, you're never at home for lunch.
Exactly. What on earth's the matter?
It's nothing. It's really... Oh, Fred.
Well, I really don't see what's so terribly funny.
I do. It's all right, darling. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at me. I'm the one that's funny. I'm an absolute idiot. Worrying myself about things that don't really exist. Making mountains out of molehills.
Well, I told you when you came in that it wasn't anything serious. There was no need for you to get into such a state.
No, I see that now. I really do.
The next week, I went to the Cardoma and managed to get the same table. I waited a bit, but he didn't come. The ladies' orchestra was playing away as usual. I looked at the cellist. She had seemed to be so funny last week, but today didn't seem funny anymore. She looked pathetic, poor thing. After lunch, I happened to pass by the hospital. I remember looking up at the windows and wondering if he were there, and whether something awful had happened to prevent him turning up. I got to the station earlier than usual. He wasn't on the platform, and I suddenly felt panic-stricken at the thought of not seeing him again. Suddenly, I heard the sound of running footsteps.
Oh, my dear, I'm so sorry. It's a terrible sight.
Your train, you'll miss it.
I've no way of letting you know. The house surgeon had to operate suddenly. It wasn't anything really serious, but I had to stand by as it was one of my special patients. You do understand, don't you?
Of course. It doesn't matter a bit.
I thought of sending a note along to the Cardoma, but I thought they'd probably never find you or keep on shouting your name out and embarrass you.
Please don't say any more. I really do understand. Quickly, the whistle's gone.
I'm so relieved. I had a chance to explain. I didn't think that I should ever see you again.
How absurd of you. Quickly, shut the door.
Next Thursday?
Yes, next Thursday.
We'll go and see that picture at the cinema. Flames of Passion.
Oh, yes, all right.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm afraid Flames of Passion was a terribly bad picture. We crept out before the end rather furtively, as though we were committing a crime. The usherette at the door looked at us with stony contempt. It was a relief to be in the fresh air, for it really was a lovely afternoon. We walked by the lake in the park, and Alex suddenly said,
I'm sick of staring at the water. I'd love to be on it. Couldn't we go out in a rowing boat?
You don't use them at this time of the year. They'll all be covered up for the winter.
I'm sure I can bribe the boatman. Come on, let's try.
The old man who looked after the boats thought we were mad, but a small tip persuaded him to let us have one. Alec rowed off at a great rate, and I trailed my hand in the water. It was very cold, but a lovely feeling.
You don't row very well, do you?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I don't row at all. Oh, I don't think I've had as much fun as this for years.
Oh, look out.
Huh?
We're coming to the bridge. We won't get through it.
Of course we will. Just pull on your left. Now pull on your left. No, not right, left. No, oh, I think I've got
it. No, don't get
it.
You're
perfectly all right. I'm just going to... Oh!
Alec was absolutely drenched. But the old man allowed us to use the boathouse so that Alec could dry out. He even lent Alec an old overcoat to wear while the clothes were drying over the stove. We sat there on the upturned dinghies, smoking cigarettes and sipping tea.
Well,
The boatman turned up trumps, thank goodness.
The British have always been nice to mad people. He thinks we're quite dotty. But just look how sweet he's been. Cocoa, tea, milk, even sugar. What tea?
Thank you.
Sugar?
Two. You know what's happened, don't you?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I've fallen in love with you.
Yes. I know.
Tell me honestly. Please tell me honestly if what I believe is true.
What do you believe?
That it's the same with you, that you've fallen in love too.
That's so silly.
Why?
I know you so little.
But it is true, though, isn't it?
Yes. It's true.
Laura.
No, please. We must be sensible. Please help me to be sensible. We mustn't behave like this. We must forget what we said.
Not yet. Not quite yet.
But we must, don't you see?
Listen. It's too late now to be as sensible as all that. It's too late to forget what we said. And anyway, whether we said it or not, it couldn't have mattered. We know. We've both of us known for a long time.
How can you say that? I've only known you for 4 weeks. We only talked for the first time last Thursday week.
Last Thursday week. Hasn't it been a long time since then for you? Answer me truly.
Yes.
How often did you decide that you were never going to see me again?
Several times a day.
So did I.
Oh, Alec.
I love you. Oh, I love your wide eyes and the way you smile and your shyness and the way you laugh at my jokes.
Please don't.
I love you. I love you. You love me too. It's no use pretending that it hasn't happened because it has.
Yes, it has. I don't want to pretend anything either to you or to anyone else. But from now on, I shall have to. That's what's wrong, don't you see? That's what spoils everything. That's why we must stop here and now talking like this. We are neither of us free to love each other. There is too much in the way. There is still time. If we control ourselves and behave like sensible human beings, there's still time to...
There's no time at all.
There's your train.
Yes.
I'll come with you through the subway and over to the other platform.
Wait. I want to kiss you before I go.
No, dear. Don't. Not here. Someone will see.
Please, please. I love you so.
Oh. There's someone coming, and you must go. You'll miss your train.
Next Thursday?
Yes, of course.
I'm so glad. So very glad.
I went back through the subway and got into my train as usual. I suddenly felt quite wildly happy. Like a romantic schoolgirl. Like a romantic fool. You see... He had said he loved me, and I had said I loved him. And it was true. It was true. I imagined him holding me in his arms. I imagined being with him in all sorts of glamorous circumstances. I saw us leaning on the rail of a ship, looking out at sea and the stars, standing on some tropical beach in the moonlight with the palm trees sighing above us. Then the palm trees changed into those pollarded willows by the canal just before the level crossing. Then suddenly the train arrived at Ketchway, and all my silly dreams disappeared. I got out of the compartment, gave up my ticket, and went home as usual.
Had a good day?
Yes, dear, lovely.
What did you do?
Well, I shopped, and had lunch, and went to the pictures.
All by yourself?
Yes, no, that is... not exactly.
How do you mean, not exactly?
Well, I went to the pictures by myself... But I had lunch with Mary Norton at the Cardoma. She couldn't come to the pictures because she had to go and see her in-laws. So I walked with her to the bus and then went off on my own.
I haven't seen Mary Norton for ages. How is she looking?
She was looking very well, really. A little fatter, I think.
Is she? Well, I'm not surprised, to tell the truth. Come on, then. Let's go in to dinner. I'm devilish hungry.
You go in. I want to make a phone call. I'll only be 5 minutes.
Oh, all right. But be as quick as you can, won't you?
I had lied. It was the first time in our married life that I had ever lied, or needed to lie. At that moment, the shame of the whole thing began. The guiltiness. That week was a misery. I went through it in a sort of trance. Thursday came at last. I had arranged to meet Alec outside the hospital at 12:30.
I thought you wouldn't come. I've been thinking all week that you wouldn't come.
I didn't mean to, really, but... Here I am.
I decided that if you did, I'd take you to somewhere special.
How exciting. Where?
The Royal Hotel.
How grand.
Yes, it is, rather.
But won't it be frightfully expensive?
Yes, but you're only middle-aged once.
We ordered a bottle of champagne with our lunch, and we were both so very gay and happy. When he had paid the bill, Alex said that he had a surprise for me, and that if I would wait in the lounge for 5 minutes, he'd show me what it was. He went out and down the steps at a run, more like an excited schoolboy than a respectable doctor. This moment of happiness was suddenly broken by the approach of two women I knew, Mary Norton and Mrs. Rowlandson. They had obviously seen us in the dining room.
Laura, it was you after all. Hermione said it was, didn't you, Hermione?
Yes, I did.
But you know how short-sighted I am. I peered and peered and couldn't be sure.
Oh, Mary, I never saw you at all. How dreadful of me. I expect it was the champagne. I'm not used to champagne at lunch. Or for dinner, for that matter, of course. But Alec insisted.
Alec who, dear?
Alec Harvey, of course. I'm sure you remember the Harveys. I've known him for years.
I don't think.
Well, he'll be back in a minute. You'll probably recognize him when you peer at him closely.
He certainly looked very charming and very attentive.
He's dear. One of the nicest people in the world and a wonderful doctor.
Right, everything's ready. If I... Oh, sorry. I didn't realize.
Alec, you remember Mrs. Norton?
I'm afraid I...
It's no use, Laura. We've never met before in our lives. I'm sure we haven't.
How absurd. I made certain that he and Madeline were there when you dined with us just before Christmas. Alec, this is Mrs. Rodinson.
Oh. How do you do? It was horrid weather, isn't it?
Yes.
Still, I suppose we can't expect spring at this time of year, can we?
No.
Well, we really must be going. I'm taking Hermione with me to see the in-laws to give moral support. Goodbye, Dr. Harvey.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Mrs. Jackson.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, my dear. I do so envy you and your champagne.
That was awful. Awful.
Never mind.
They've been watching us all through lunch. Oh, dear.
Forget it. Come out and look at the surprise.
There outside the hotel was a little two-seater car. Alec had borrowed it from Stephen Lynn for the afternoon. We got in silence and drove away. When we were out in the real country, I think it was a few miles beyond Greyfield, we stopped the car just outside a village and got out. There was a little bridge and a stream, and the sun was making an effort to come out, but really not succeeding very well. We leaned on the parapet of the bridge and looked down into the water. I shivered. And Alec put his arm around me.
Cold?
No. Not really.
Happy?
No. Not really.
I want to ask you something just to reassure myself.
What is it?
It is true for you, isn't it? This overwhelming feeling that we have for each other. It is as true for you as it is for me. Isn't it?
It's true. Oh, Alec. I don't remember how long we stayed on that bridge or what we said. Finally, we got back into the car and arrived at Stephen Lynn's garage just as it was getting dark. We put the car away, and Alec said he had to leave the keys of the car in Stephen Lynn's flat, and suggested that I came up with him. I refused rather too vehemently. Alec reminded me that Stephen wasn't coming back till late, but I still refused. I asked him to take me to the station, but by this time it was rather late.
I'm going to miss my train. I'm going back.
Back where?
To Stephen's flat.
Oh, Alec.
Won't you come with me?
No, Alec, I can't. You know I can't. I must go now. I really must go home. He stood there watching me as I ran off. When I got to the station, I got a cup of tea and went over to our usual table. Two soldiers came in and started to make a scene at the counter.
Afternoon, lady.
Good afternoon.
Couple of splashes, please.
I'm sorry, my license does not permit me to sell alcohol out of arrows.
Oh, just sneak us a couple under cover of them four old sandwiches.
Them sandwiches are fresh this morning, and I shall do no such thing.
Oh, come on, be a sport. You can pop it into a couple of tea cups.
You can have as much as you want after 6 o'clock.
My throat's like a parrot's cage. Listen.
I'm really sorry, it's out of arrows. You wouldn't want me to get into trouble now, would you?
Oh, give it a chance, lady. That's all. Just give it a chance.
They're all. Ask Mr. Godfrey to come here for a moment, will you?
Yes, Mrs. Becker. At once, Mrs. Becker.
I was frantic with indecision. Should I go home? Or should I stay with Alec?
What's going on in here?
Mr. Godfrey, these gentlemen are annoying me. Aren't they, Beryl?
Yes, Mrs. Baggett.
Oh, we haven't done nothing.
We found ourselves for a couple of drinks.
He insulted me, Mr. Godfrey.
I wanted to stay with Alec. Oh, how I wanted to stay. But I knew I must not.
We never did nothing of the sort. No. Just having a little joke, that's all.
Hop it, both of you.
Look, we've got a right to stay here as long as we like.
You heard what I said. Hop it.
Ah, what is this? A free country or a blooming Sunday school?
Oh, come on, Johnny. Don't argue with the poor bastard.
Hop it.
Toodaloo, Mother. Oh. Them sandwiches I made this morning, your Shirley Temple.
Thank you, Albert. What a nerve talking to you like that.
Be quiet, Beryl. Put me out a nip of 3-star. I've been quite upset.
I've got to get back to the gate.
Oh, you see you later, Albert.
Okay.
I kept saying to myself, I must go home. I really must go home. I really must go home.
I'm going back to the flat.
No, I must go home now. Really, I must go home.
I'm going back to the flat.
I'm going home.
Excuse me, madam, have you finished with your cup?
Oh, yes. Excuse me, I really must go. I've got to go back. I think I've forgotten something.
Well, I never. What was the matter with her? And the right old city.
I ran back to the block of flats as fast as my legs would carry me. It had begun to rain, but I scarcely noticed it. Stephen's flat was on the second floor.
Oh, darling, I didn't dare to hope.
It's raining.
Is it?
It started just as I turned out into the high street.
Your coat's wet. Here, let me take it off.
Thanks. Must look an absolute fright.
I'll put your coat and hat near the fire so that they can air.
Thank you.
I hope the fire will perk up in a few minutes.
I expect the wood was damp.
Yes, I expect it was. I'm afraid it's rather a bleak little room. I hope you don't mind.
No, of course not.
Do sit down, darling.
I feel so foolish. Like a guilty schoolgirl.
May I kiss you?
Alec, I can't stay, you know. Really, I can't.
Just a little while. Just a little while.
Oh, what's that?
It's Stephen, I'm afraid. He must have come back early.
Quickly, I must go. My coat, hat, quick.
Here, to the kitchen. There's a tradesman's staircase.
Is that you, Alec?
Yes. You're back early.
I felt a cold coming on, so I decided to come back to bed. You know, Alec, my dear, you have hidden depths that I never even suspected.
Look here, Stephen. I really haven't...
For heaven's sake, Alec. No explanations or apologies. I'm the one who should apologize for having returned so inopportunely. It is quite obvious to me that you were interviewing the patient privately. Women are frequently neurotic creatures and the hospital atmosphere upsets them.
I ran until I couldn't run any longer. I knew it was stupid to run, but I couldn't help myself. I felt so utterly humiliated and defeated and so dreadfully, dreadfully ashamed. I suddenly realized that I couldn't go home, not until I had got myself under more control and had a little time to think. So I went into the high street and found a tobacconist and telephoned home.
Fred, is that you? I'm sorry, I shan't be home to dinner. I'm with Miss Lewis, dear, the librarian at Boots I told you about. Her mother's just been taken ill, and I promised to stay with her until the doctor comes.
It's awfully easy to lie when you know that you're trusted implicitly. So very easy, and so very degrading. I started walking without much purpose. I turned out of the high street almost immediately. I was terrified that I might run into Alec. I was pretty certain that he'd come after me to the station. I walked for a long while. Finally, I found myself at the war memorial. It had stopped raining altogether and I felt stiflingly hot. So I sat down on one of the seats. There was nobody about. And I lit a cigarette. I wanted to calm my nerves and I thought it might help. I sat there for ages. I don't know how long. Then I noticed a policeman walking up and down a little way off. He was looking at me rather suspiciously. Presently, he came up to me.
Feeling all right, miss?
Yes, thank you.
Waiting for someone?
No, I'm not waiting for anyone.
Oh, you don't want to go and catch cold, you know. That would never do. It's a damp night to be sitting about on seats, you know.
I'm going now, anyhow. I have a train to catch.
You're sure you feel quite all right?
Yes, quite sure.
Good night.
Good night, miss.
I walked away, trying to look casual, knowing that he was watching me. I felt like a criminal. I walked rather quickly back in the direction of the high street. I got to the station 15 minutes before the last train to Ketchworth, and then I realized that I'd been wandering about for over 3 hours. But it didn't seem to be any time at all. I went into the refreshment room and asked for a glass of brandy.
I'm sorry, we're just closing.
I see you are, but you're not quite closed yet, are you?
Oh, all right. Christoph?
Yes, that'll do.
Temperance, please.
Here.
We're closed in a few minutes, you know.
I sat down at our usual table in the corner. Almost at once, Alec arrived.
Thank God. Oh, darling.
Please go away. Please don't say anything.
I've been looking for you everywhere. I've watched every train.
Please go away.
You're being dreadfully cruel. It was just a beastly accident that he came back early. He doesn't know who you are. He never even saw you.
I suppose he laughed, didn't he? I suppose you spoke of me together as men of the world.
We didn't speak of you. We spoke of a nameless creature who had no reality at all.
Why didn't you tell him who I was? Why didn't you tell him we were cheap and low and without courage? Why didn't you...
Stop it, Laura. Please, pull yourself together.
It's true, don't you see? It's true.
We know we really love each other. That's true. That's all that really matters.
Isn't all that matters? Other things matter too. Self-respect matters and decency. I can't go on any longer.
Could you really say goodbye? Not see me anymore?
Yes. If you'd help me...
I love you, Laura. I shall love you always, until the end of my life. All the shame that the world might force on us couldn't touch the real truth of it. I can't look at you now because I know something. I know that this is the beginning of the end. Not the end of my loving you, but the end of our being together. But not quite yet, darling. Please, not quite yet.
Very well. Not quite yet.
I know what you feel about this evening. I mean, about the beastliness of it. I know about the strain of our different lives. Our lives apart from each other. The feeling of guilt, of doing wrong, is a little too strong, isn't it? Too persistent. Perhaps too great a price to pay for a few hours of happiness we get out of it. I know all this. Because it's the same for me, too. But let's be careful. Let's prepare ourselves. A sudden break now, however brave and admirable, would be too cruel. We can't do such violence to our hearts and minds.
Very well.
I'm going away.
I see.
But not quite yet.
Please. Not quite yet.
Mr. Kenton, it's after closing time.
Oh, is it?
Ross left to look up.
All right.
We went out onto the platform and stood waiting for my train.
I want you to promise me something.
What is it?
Promise me that however unhappy you are and however much you think things over, that you will meet me next Thursday.
Where?
Outside the hospital. 12:30.
All right. I promise.
I've got to talk to you. I've got to explain.
About going away?
Yes.
Where are you going? Where can you go? You can't give up your practice.
I had a job offered me. I wasn't going to tell you. I wasn't going to take it. But I know now that it's the only way out.
Where?
A long way away. Johannesburg.
Oh,
My brother's out there. They're opening a new hospital. They want me in it. It's a fine opportunity, really. I'll take Madeline and the boys. It's been torturing me, the necessity of making a decision one way or the other. I haven't told anybody, not even Madeline. I couldn't bear the idea of leaving you, but now I see that it's got to happen soon anyway. It's almost happening already.
When will you go?
Almost immediately, in about 2 weeks' time.
It's quite near, isn't it?
Do you want me to stay? Do you want me to turn down the offer?
Don't be foolish, Alan.
I'll do whatever you say.
That's unkind of you, my darling.
The train for Ketchworth, London, and Purford. Now entering number 3 platform.
You're not angry with me, are you?
No, I'm not angry. I don't think I'm anything, really. I feel just tired.
forgive me.
Forgive you for what?
For everything. For having met you in the first place. For taking the piece of grit out of your eye. For loving you. For bringing you so much misery.
I'll forgive you. If you'll forgive me.
All that was a week ago. It is hardly credible that it should be so short a time. Today was our last day together. Our very last together in all our lives. I met him outside the hospital, as I had promised, at 12:30 this morning. That was only this morning. We drove into the country again, but this time he hired a car. I lit cigarettes for him every now and then as we went along. We didn't talk much. I felt numbed and hardly alive at all. We had lunch in a village pub. Afterwards, we went to the same bridge over the stream, the bridge that we had been to before. His last few hours together went by so quickly. We walked across the station yard in silence and went in the refreshment room. We got our cups of tea and sat at our usual table in the corner. Over at the counter, the ticket collector talked to the refreshment lady.
Sorry, I couldn't get in yesterday.
Are you all right, darling?
Yes. I'm all right.
I wish I could think of something to say.
It doesn't matter. I'm not saying anything anymore.
I'll miss my train and wait to see you into yours.
No, please don't. I'll come over to your platform with you. I'd rather.
Very well.
Do you think we shall ever see each other again?
I don't know. Not for years, anyway.
The children will all be grown up. I wonder if they'll ever meet and know each other.
Couldn't I write to you just once in a while?
No, please not. We promised we wouldn't.
Nora, dear, I do love you so very much. I love you with all my heart and soul.
I want to die. If only I could die.
If you died, you'd forget me. I want to be remembered.
Yes, I know. I do too.
We've still got a few minutes.
Nora, what a lovely surprise.
Oh, darling.
My dear, I've been shopping till I'm dropping. My feet are nearly falling off and my throat's parched. I thought of having tea and spindles, but I was terrified of losing...
It was cruel of fate to be against us right up to the last minute. Dolly Messiter, poor, well-meaning, irritating Dolly Messiter, crashed into those last few precious minutes we had together. She chattered and fussed, but I didn't hear what she said. I was dazed and bewildered. Alec behaved so beautifully, and with such perfect politeness. Nobody could have guessed what he was really feeling. Then the bell went for his train.
There's your train.
Yes, I know.
Aren't you coming with us?
No, I go in the opposite direction. My practice is in Shirley.
Oh, I see.
I'm a general practitioner at the moment.
Dr. Harvey is going out to Africa next week.
Oh, how thrilling.
I must go.
Yes, you must.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. I felt the touch of his hand for a moment, and then he walked away. Away. Out of my life forever. I said to myself, he didn't go. He couldn't have gone. At any moment now, he'll come into the refreshment room again, pretending that he'd forgotten something. I prayed for him to do that. Just so that I could see him once more. For an instant...
Our train?
No, it's for the express.
The boat train?
Yes.
Ah, that's the train that doesn't stop, isn't it? What was I saying just now? Oh, yes, I was talking about last week. You see, I've been able to see Bob.
Dolly still went on talking. She didn't notice when I left her and went outside. I was standing on the edge of the platform as the express came thundering through the station. I thought... I must end it all now. So easy. So very easy. I meant to do it, Fred. I really meant to do it. I stood there trembling with the lights from the train flashing across my face and the noise deafening me, but then, just in time, I stepped back. I couldn't. I wasn't brave enough. I should like to be able to say that it was the thought of you and the children that prevented me. But it wasn't. I had no thoughts at all. Only an overwhelming desire not to be unhappy anymore. Not to feel anything ever again. I turned and went back into the refreshment room. That's when I nearly fainted. Dear Fred, that's the story I can never tell you. If only I could.
Laura, what are you thinking?
Oh, I was just dreaming.
Whatever your dream was, it wasn't a very happy one, was it?
No.
Is there anything I can do to help?
Yes, my dear. You always help.
You've been a long way away.
Yes, Fred.
Thank you for coming back to me.
In Brief Encounter by Noel Coward, Cheryl Campbell was Laura and Ian Holm, Alec. Fred was played by Stephen Thorne, Myrtle by Shirley Dixon, and Albert by Walter Hall. The rest of the cast was as follows. Beryl, Rosalind Adams, the policeman, Ray Brown, Dolly, Miranda Forbes, Mary Norton, Maddie Head, and Mrs. Rowlandson, Jean Trent, with David Goodison and Crawford Logan as the two soldiers. Sound balance was by Nicola Barringer. Noel Coward's screenplay was adapted for radio by Walter Hall, and the BBC World Service drama production was directed by Dickon Reed.